This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Giddy hit Austin!
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest. I lost my mind again, out where the river swells with rain. She kindly took me in, made me feel I was not the one to blame. As shakes were blowing in the trees, the unknown shaking at my knees. Her voice places me at ease.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Espousing wisdom, guiding you through your chaotic musical life, enlightening yourself. And all who listen from Trinidad World Recording Studios here in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, my studio here where you yourself can come record. Tell your buddy in the band, you know, he's trying to get that record made. Sure, he can do it on his laptop in the garage, but goodness gracious, just for a little bit, a little effort, go to Phil, go to Fort Worth and record at Trinidad, 817-733-5256. Download those Pritchett records, $4 a piece on p2tunes.com. The day finds us very well here at Trinidad, folks. We hope it does finds you very well. Also, joining me, the cloud has just come over the studio here. A dark cloud of didactic wisdom. The other half of the didactic duo here, a spewing vitriol, spouting venom in every direction. Kurt South is here. How you doing, South?
I'm good. I'm ready to just tear into some people.
Tear into some people.
I'm angry. I got worked up.
I know you got worked up in the pre-show. We were talking about this.
I punched this microphone right in the grill.
That's right. We had a. Our first time in this first section, we're going to look at something that that comes up quite frequently in these day and age. In these turbulent musical times, you're looking for anything to sell a record, sell a book, and it used to be, I'm trying to remember when the new Guns N' Roses album came out, the new Nirvana album, it was just like, hey man, the new album comes out next week. I don't know. There wasn't a feature. In Rolling Stone, there'd be a feature, maybe an interview, but there wasn't that juicy tidbit in the interview of the guy talking about a drug addiction, and he experimented with homosexuality, or his wife died.
Jordan McCoskey.
Well, to the point.
Just kidding, Jordan. Just kidding.
Seems like, I remember when the Black Eyed Peas album came out. There's all this press about, Fergie was on meth or something.
Oh, I had a drug problem.
Yeah, just confessions of Fergie. That's on the cover of the magazine. And you think, well, maybe she's just... There's always a purpose to why it's coming out now.
Maybe that's the excuse they're using for the horribly crappy music that they put out.
Well, then they've got you kind of see that, oh, this is all part of the album coming out, right?
Absolutely.
And our guy Bob Lefsetz took a lot of flack for suggesting one of his recent posts that Corinne Bailey Rae, the
mediocre British singer.
Songwriter, who well, she had a hit, wasn't it on like Grey's Anatomy or something?
Oh,
what is something like that? Whatever. But her husband died tragically.
Drug overdose.
But he said, "Gosh, you know, she's using her husband's death to sell records. That's terrible." And I was kind of like, "Ooh, ow."
Well, and he died like a year ago.
Oh, was it really?
I think so. It's been a while, and then all of a sudden, in the couple months surrounding the release of her album, it's just her giving interviews about her husband's death, and it's all over the internet. And her husband died, and she talks about.
Then she says, and the album comes out next week.
It's just my album drops in 4 days. You know? Lefsetz just said, how dare her whore out her husband's death to promote a new album.
Ouch!
Which, hey, he took a lot of flack and was called, you know, all sorts of names for that. But you know what? I 100% agree.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all of us have bad things mm-hmm. in our life that yeah. happen. Every single one of us.
Right.
And for some reason, it seems like it's a recent development. The last few years, it has become so in vogue for someone to talk about their drug addiction. Well, hey, guess what? You're in right. the music business. Everyone's had a drug yeah. problem. You're not the only one, but apparently they make it. They experimented one time with
drugs, sex, or death.
Yeah.
Those are kind of the three, one of those.
You know, I had a, you know, yeah, or just I paid someone for sex in a truck stop stall or something, and now I'm putting out an album.
They're influenced by latest work.
Well,
it's a little different with a book. I mean, we were talking about like the Andre Agassi deal because, you know, he's on meth or something. But those articles are referencing what has been written in the book. It's
right.
about, oh, what's in this book? Mm-hmm. Well, I talk about this. Okay. But music's kind of different, isn't it? But if, I feel like it's like you. Recently when I see a new thing from the Black Eyed Peas or who is the – Shelley Wright – the country singer.
I got a new
album coming out, and I'm a lesbian. You're kind of like, oh, okay, you know. Why would you even say? I mean, I don't understand.
Well,
do they think it's going to help sell albums?
Timing. They do. They do because I guess there. I read an article about Shelley Wright. She's disappeared from as a country music artist the
she
last
had hits
decade.
Like yeah, I mean mid 90s.
She had big hits. Yeah, 10, 15
yeah,
years
yeah, yeah.
ago. And of course now she's putting out a new album and writing a book.
Oh.
Her struggle.
Okay.
And I read this article in People magazine, just on the cover of People magazine. Shelley Wright comes out, and it is the most melodramatic piece of bullcrap I've ever read in my life. Just I sat down on my bed and put a gun in my mouth. I was so distraught over my homosexuality. I'm like, well, it sounds like it's been a real blessing to you. I mean, but it was just,
well,
I could not believe.
Very sad, but in the context of new product hitting the shelves, you kind of go, why is she saying this now?
Well,
first of all, why do we really care?
Exactly.
And then also,
you're the one making an issue. Just
they're making a front page news about it.
For no other reason.
Then they turn around and go, I wish the press would just leave me alone.
Yeah,
so I can struggle this on my own. I'm like, you had the press conference. You went on Letterman or an Oprah. Or something. I mean, you go out there.
It absolutely wears me out because it seems like so much of our culture, at least in America now, is driven by emotional pandering.
Right.
And it just pisses me off to no end because, like I said, we all have bad things that happen in our lives. Any of us could come out with a new album and try to promote it by just saying how it relates to some tragedy in our life.
Right, exactly.
And to me, that's just completely disingenuous. You know,
everyone's got it at some level.
Well, the lead singer, Rob Halford, for Judas Priest.
Mm-hmm.
He's gay his whole life, but everyone knew.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't remember them coming out and going, hey, Rob Halford's gay. He's on new record. You know, it just didn't happen. It was just, that's what he is. But, you know, you got these people who use.
Adam Lambert did the same thing. I mean, he was on the cover. Just,
well, and he just
I'm
went out.
I'm gay, like we didn't know anyway.
Yeah, like
and the new record comes out next week. Like, that's the lead story. It's not enough to say, hey, he's got a new record coming out. That's just not news. It doesn't draw any attention to the album. So they have a drug addiction, a gay thing, or a death.
You
know, drug, sex, or death, it has to be the headline. It can't just be I think
what it does is it masks the real fact here is that for most of these people, no one wants your record.
Yeah, no, it's not.
No one got more press a couple years ago than Corinne Bailey Rae.
Mm-hmm.
She was everywhere. Her album, I'm sure it sold well. She had a big single. She hasn't even sold 200,000 copies of this new album, which by big pop standards, that's nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, she sells a little bit more than Cross Canadian Ragweed.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
She's this major international star, supposedly.
Right.
You know, and who's going to buy the Shelley record or Shelley Wright record? I don't know, a few people. But who's going to buy my record? Not very many people. But
You need an article. You ready? You ready for some advice?
Yeah.
I'm your publicist. You ready? You made this record. You made this video. You got a good product, right? You're out there playing shows.
It's mediocre
South.
At best.
All right. He's mediocre at best. That's what we're sitting on. I'm looking at a mediocre Kurt South record. Come on. Give yourself a little more credit. But rather than just going to all these news outlets, okay, Texas Music or whatever, and saying, hey, this is Phil Pritchett. I'm Kurt's publicist. We're trying to get some press on Kurt's new record. He's got some fast songs and some slow songs and some pedal steel. And it's deeply personal. And I mean, the guy's just going to be going, huh, whatever. Well, so here's what I'm going to say. Here's our attack plan. Kurt's got a new record out. And just as the guy's just getting ready to tune me out, getting ready to hang it up, I go, so he wants to do an article, front page, that just says, I think I might be gay, and I also used to use drugs proficiently.
I hooked up with Adam Lambert, something like that.
That's right.
And all of a sudden, the dude's interested.
And this is driven by the death of my neighbor, who's a big influence on me. Growing up, and his tragic suicide or something. I don't know if that was something. But, you know, so we'll come up with a couple of things like that, and then they'll go, ooh, hey.
Yep.
Let's not just put this on the entertainment section. We'll put this on the front page, you know. Just you sitting there. It's kind of like your album cover deal where you're face down on the floor, you know, in the bathroom stall. That kind of deal. Do you think that would sell more records or at least garner some interest?
No, I don't think it does.
See, I don't think it would either.
I just don't think anyone cares. And I think when you take that approach to sell your product, whatever it is.
By selling personal information on yourself ahead of time.
Think you're telling us a lot about yourself. I think you're just telling us that, hey, I'm not that genuine. There's not much real about me. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to spin myself into a career with whatever means possible.
Right.
And if you have to get to that point, then I just say, what do you do? Go do something else.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole Adam Lambert thing is the most contrived, just bunch of BS I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. I wish he would just go away. Mm-hmm. But that's our culture now.
Sure.
And it's generally accepted that that's how you do things now in America for some reason.
Right.
You know, we just, the Shelley Wright thing just really blew me away.
Yeah.
I thought that everyone knew she was gay, honestly. Mm-hmm. I'd always thought she was. I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't care.
Yeah.
But the tone of this article and just some of the things she said in there, I thought, man.
Why would you share this with people? Right? I mean, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, that's the other
thing. You're just like,
is nowadays people are so willing to share anything and everything with the public.
Well, that was a big thing. We excuse Agassiz a little bit for mentioning because that's part of his life. He's on meth. But a lot of people did say, and I thought to a good point, they're like, man, why would he come up with this now? Like, why would you even put it?
Well, sell the book. That's the reason.
That's it. I'm just kind of like, you can still tell the story.
And I question whether or not he even was.
Yeah, really?
I go, okay, who knows?
Yeah.
He could be lying. He could just be making this crap up to sell the book. That happens all the time.
Sure.
If you're naive enough to believe everything that you're told,
right,
that's fine. But I don't. And when a professional athlete goes all this time, oh, I was just on meth all those years. Well, we've never heard a hint of it. I mean, we all knew Lawrence Taylor was doing Peruvian angel dust.
Yeah,
that's no big deal. We all know that these baseball players are on steroids.
Right, right.
I don't know. Maybe Agassiz was on meth.
Yeah, right,
but
right.
Why mention it now? Do you not have enough money?
Yeah. That's a
good
question. You're
not famous enough? Why tell us this now?
Did this publisher say, Andre, it's a good story about your dad. He kind of put a lot of pressure on you, and you met Brooke Shields and struggled with all this stuff. We need something else. Is there anything in your life we could really go into that would? Because that was the leader on the book, is that he admitted that. That was a big red flag, or you know, I mean,
well,
who knows? Maybe he wanted to get it off his chest.
And besides, get it off to your chest to the people in your life that matter.
Yeah,
but not to millions of strangers.
Right.
That's my whole point, and I think that.
What purpose does it serve?
It serves no purpose. It just serves no purpose at all. And I get tired of celebrities trying to get our sympathy.
Yeah.
I don't feel sorry for you at all. I don't care what happened. It was probably your own fault. And you will get zero sympathy. I empathize.
Right.
That's unfortunate. That's bad.
Yeah.
But I've probably done what you're saying you just did.
Right.
And it was my own fault.
That's right.
I don't feel bad for Agassiz, but so many of these stories are thrown at us.
Yeah.
You know, with all these people who are rich and famous and who live lifestyles we can never imagine.
Right.
They're always wanting us to just take them into our mm-hmm. hearts and feel bad for Heidi Montag that she's a plasticized freak.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad for her. She's done it to herself. I don't feel bad for whatever happened to Agassiz. He's
right.
made his bed and he is now lying in it.
Right.
And it's covered with millions of dollars probably. So why do I give a rat's rear end what happened to him and what the outcome was? I just don't.
That's where the struggle is on where to draw the line in marketing something. And I think you do. I think when you do just share painful, personal, embarrassing information with people, it's the equivalent of just pulling your pants down in public. It's just...
Now, I've done that. That's
I know
different.
You have.
That
is it cathartic for you? Well, it's just... it's just...
Does cathartic mean arousing?
Yeah.
No. Okay, no.
Dear grief. Dear grief. It's a family show we say every week.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
Dear grief.
Sorry. But, you know, but that kind of thing ties into everyday people with
right.
Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, just
please,
always...
when I pull up my homepage on Facebook, do yeah. not let me see you discussing deeply personal issues
right.
About your
it
family.
It makes me uneasy.
And then having all these people comment on it. Why does anyone think
Dude,
that's
they
a
all,
good idea?
I think everyone's just seeking to be they're understood.
All, they're all starring
maybe.
In their own movie.
They are. They
it's
are,
driven
they are.
By the celebrity culture
it totally
that it
is.
Trickles down yeah. to the every to the just everyday people.
You know,
we all have our own reality shows in our heads
yeah.
and on our Facebook pages. And man, nothing makes me more uncomfortable than to just see you discussing your marital problems on Facebook.
You know, when Bob Dylan did Blood on the Tracks, early 70s, it was known that he was writing that stuff around the time he was getting divorced from his first wife, and it was a very painful time for him. But he was very secretive about it. In fact, to this day, people really don't know, people listen to that record and discuss and debate about what's about what.
Now, Jacob Dylan has come out and said that Blood on the Tracks was about his family.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Up. But
well,
but it's still well, a very obscure.
You drew
record.
That. You,
yeah.
you drew two and two together. You go, man, it's just so passionately written. It's so passionately delivered. But it wasn't real obvious. He didn't also do an interview with Rolling Stones going, yeah, this song, you know, I was just had the gun in my head, you know, as my wife was screaming in the next room, and I just shot up a fresh
Who
syringe.
Who here hasn't had the gun
yeah, I'm just
in the head?
I'm just kind of like, God, why would he say all that? And Dylan would always just kind of shrug and go, well, if people enjoy it, then. Well, you know, and there was some integrity there. You know,
yeah.
the old authors of, I don't know how much Hemingway or any of those guys really talk about why they write something. They just do, and they just let people experience it. But you're just, man, Shelley Wright's not going to be making a record, with all due respect, that's just going to speak, to show a window to her soul. And I don't know, she wrote some songs and... She's got to explain it with all this pain. I you know, it is a
well,
little...
Well, put it in... Let the art speak for itself.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, just
You don't
it.
Have to give an interview. Just say, Lance, it's a new record. Oh, is this about this? Is this about having your kids? Is this about your divorce? Just kind of say, you know what? It's in there, and
yeah.
that's it. But I guess people feel like it wouldn't sell. It probably wouldn't. You know, I don't
and
know.
And I feel the same way about politics in music. Man, if you feel a certain way, find a good creative way to
yeah.
say it in a song. That may or may not be. It might not hit me over the head.
Right.
But you know, once you just get on that platform, it becomes a beating.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, go listen to Neil Young's "Living with War" if you want to be kicked in the crotch repeatedly.
Oh, please.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I love Neil Young.
Sure.
But you're like, come on,
you
man.
And you and all the bearded guys with skinny jeans are gonna
yeah.
say how good you Neil Young is.
But no, I just as soon as you push, as you try to sell yourself to me that way, I lose interest and I mark you down. I throw you in the bin with Brangelina and all these other people.
I think maybe the moral of the story is when someone says something like that, they take possession of that affliction like they're the only one who's done it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you know what? I've used drugs. You just kind of want to go, okay, big deal. You know what I'm saying? Like it's this big announcement. You
I had
know what
an
mean?
8-ball for breakfast. So what?
Well, yeah. Kurt South is here. This is Phil Pritchett and Kurt South. Someone called us the didactic duo. We're running with it. We're running with it here on the podcast. Well, here in our next segment, I'm going to ask for Kurt's help, as we do sometimes. We call it therapy, P2's therapy session. Sometimes I'm on the couch. Sometimes Kurt's on the couch. I'm going to lay down. I'm having some gear trouble here. I don't know if it's just I've been playing the same guitar for too long. Having some gear trouble, struggling going back and forth between the Fender Telecaster and the Fender Strat. We're going to talk about guitar stuff and the struggles.
I was hoping it was going to be something good.
And the struggles therein.
I thought it was going to be a good, dirty, deep struggle we could get
It
into.
Is a dirty and deep struggle.
It's just guitars.
Oh, come on. I want your thoughts on it, South. I'm going to get over there on the couch in our next segment.
Just to me, and I'm home again. seasons, girl of all seasons, girl of all seasons. Girl of all seasons, girl of all seasons, girl of all seasons.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, enlightening your musical life and so much more. Kurt South is here with me, the didactic duo, right here, folks, from Trinidad World Recording in Fort Worth, Texas, broadcasting, showing you to the light, stepping over shattered CD cases, wading through the water of media morass. All these stars trying to get you to pay attention to their record by telling you they're, you know, they got drunk one time in high school and it just changed them forever and... Now they're going to write a book about it. Yeah, I don't know.
Jeez. I can't wait to start work on my book.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I want to write it.
I cannot wait.
Well, man, recently I've always played a Telecaster on stage. Had little George there. Standard setup. After all my stuff got stolen, I bought a cheap Squire, 74 Deluxe Telecaster with the humbucker pickups. That's what I've always played. But you know what? On my Telecaster, now I'm going to get down on the couch here, South, and just, I'm struggling with this here. I want you to help me out a little bit.
All right, I'm here.
And then I want to hear, stay tuned, later in this segment, we're going to talk about how Kurt met the great Billy Gibbons, ZZ Top.
Also, I forgot to mention this.
Yes.
I've had a couple of famous person encounters.
Is that right?
The Jonas Brothers.
Attended
a show that Will Hobbs and I played the week before I met Billy Gibbons.
Where was that? At Fred's?
No, at the Love Shack.
Is that right? Gosh.
Jonas Brothers.
Rubbing shoulders with
I was
the
behind
biggest.
The velvet rope with the Jonas Brothers and their dad. And their giant bodyguard.
Really?
And nice. Just 8-year-old girls crying uncontrollably surrounding us. while Will and I just rocked the house.
Nice,
and
dude.
We dubbed ourselves the Bonus Brothers.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Very tasteful.
It was very tasteful. Huh?
Well, I want to hear more about the Billy Gibbons and the Jonas Brothers. Whatever you want to feel free to share. Yeah, man, basically the long and short of it is, dude, I always played Telecaster. You know, I just put it on the back pickup, man, and go to town the whole show. But it's not as friendly to adjust the tone and the volume and stuff. And I've always had Stratocasters laying around. Stratocasters, of course, you got 3 pickups. You got 5 different settings on your pickup selectors. You know, tone
knobs.
3 knobs,
right?
3 knobs, yeah. And I just have found at some of these gigs, I'll play the Strat. There's just more tonal possibilities with a Strat. And the more I play solos and stuff, and really, I feel like over the last few years, I just express myself more on stage. I get into more of my guitar playing a little bit more maybe than I did, 5 or 6 years ago.
Much to the detriment of your audience.
Much to the detriment of my audience. Be able to just play forever. But no, I enjoy it, and I'm always learning something new, and I really get into it up there. And there's more you can do with the Strat. And you really look around at some of the great players, you know, Clapton, Jeff Beck, Robert Cray.
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, Hendrix, Jimmy Vaughn, Buddy Guy. There's a reason those guys play Stratocasters. In the rhythm guys, Springsteen play Telecaster. You've just got a couple different settings.
Mm-hmm. On a Telecaster, you have three settings you can play it on.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And there's not much difference between the three settings.
That's right.
I mean, it's just...
The front pickup's going to be a little darker, a little...
It's going to be kind of woody sounding.
Yeah,
The middle pickup's going to sound... Kind of like a Strat tone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The back pickup's just bright and honky and will slice your head open.
Yeah.
It's just a blade coming at you.
So the Strat, man, you can kind of go to that front pickup and do your just fat, bluesy Stevie Ray deal. Or you can go in between the pickups there and do your Mark Knopfler, another Strat guy.
That Lynyrd Skynyrd Strat.
Yeah, man. You can kind of do light and plunky, or you can
Get twangy with the bridge pickup.
Yeah,
on the Strat.
And man, I just find myself when I'm holding that Strat, like, I'd start with the Telecaster always, just playing. I'd break a string or something, put it down, throw the Strat on, keep the show going, and then I find myself in the middle of like a solo or something, really dialing around with the knobs and playing with the tones and it's like a whole part of my playing and my performance kind of opens up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I struggle with it because I always kind of play a Telecaster, and I don't know if that's, I'm kind of like, man, but that's kind of my thing, isn't it, playing Telecasters? Like, how can I go out there with a, and I start playing a Strat? Am I abandoning some sort of thing, you know? Yeah. I remember seeing Mark Knopfler playing Les Pauls on TV now. And I'm kind of like, man, has he switched to Les Paul? Why didn't he play Strat anymore?
He's been playing Les Pauls, though, for years.
Yeah, has he? God, I was thinking of him as such a Strat guy. It goes way, way back.
Well, he did, but I saw him on TV a while back, and he's playing a Gretsch.
Yeah, maybe he just does
the
all
thing
kinds,
is,
you know?
Like, Jeff Beck plays Les Paul a lot, too.
Yeah, he does. He does.
You know?
But he plays a Strat a lot, too.
Yeah, so, but, yeah. You know, I think most players
have multiple.
They get through a lot. I mean, I know one of the really great guitar players I know locally is a guy named Shane Green, and I've never seen him play anything but a Strat. A Tele.
Uh huh.
But you know, but he plays in country bands and he's a lead player. And
20. That's
kinda,
right. That's what those guys do. That's
he
right.
He has so he has the best tone of any country player. He plays a Strat through Telecaster through a Vox AC30.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Man, lead guitar players, take note. That's a combination.
That is
there.
A great combination.
It's a great combination.
But
you know, a lot of guys, man, they just play different guitars for different stuff, and it depends on what you're doing. If you're doing a lot more open chord strumming type stuff, you know, a good clean Telecaster sound will work.
Right.
A lot of it depends on what amp you're playing through too. You're going to get different response out of it.
Right. Right.
You know, I mean, the Telecaster through like a Fender Twin.
Yeah.
That's just a clean, honky
country. That can just roar,
twin.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But Strats are way more versatile, definitely. I like the way Telecasters look more.
Yeah, definitely.
I think you ought
to try. They've just got that rootsy image, and that's what the image is of our band, the full band. Got rootsy, just rocking, kind of a petty Springsteen front guy. And so no one said anything to me about it. It's just something I've thought about. It's just silly. I'm kind of like, gosh.
See, I always picture y'all as more like Queen or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe Devo.
Devo, Queen. Start playing a guitar like with no headstock.
Yeah, Steinberger.
That's right.
See, I think the perfect guitar for you.
What's that?
Would be like the Nashville Deluxe Telecaster.
Yeah, well, it's kind of got the Strat pickup.
It's got the Strat pickup in the middle.
Yeah, right.
And it has
the
Tele pickups in the bridge and the neck position. And, man, I had one of those for years.
Yeah.
To me, that was kind of the ultimate electric guitar.
Yeah.
I mean, because you could get pretty much the same combinations out of it.
Yeah, that's right.
I like the way guys look playing Telecaster. I think you look cooler with a Telecaster.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Huh.
I just think you do. I don't know what it is about the Strat. Now, if you're like a real crazy blues player or something, you look right with a Strat.
Yeah, all those blues
guys. Man, a lead singer with a Telecaster looks right.
Yeah.
If you know how to play.
Man, I agree. I totally agree. That's why I've been struggling a little bit with the I find myself at these gigs leaving the Telecaster sitting there and starting. Thinking, well, you start with a Strat tonight? I'm kind of like,
But
you know,
your Telecaster has extra knobs on it, though.
Yeah, it does. You can dial the volume or tone on each pickup.
So it has four knobs?
There's a lot of combinations, yeah. But it's you know, you can go to the front pickup if you want to go real dark.
See, I like those deluxe Strat or Telecasters with the two humbuckers.
It's kind of like the SGs I like too. I mean, I'll play an SG, I don't know, man. I've just been struggling with the Strat.
Do you not want to use pedals to change up tonal character?
Yeah, see, I don't like. I mean, I've just got my little blues driver. It's the only pedal I use. Just a little bit of distortion. And that knob's just right there. I had it rewired so that the volume knob, the top knob, controls the volume for all the the whole output of the guitar. So I can hit on that pedal if it's real loud. I can roll it off a little bit and play rhythm, or you know. Yeah. And so I found myself just doing all this stuff that I didn't even know I knew how to do or would think to do in the course of
show.
And I'm kind of like, man, this is cool.
Real guitar players, if you watch them, man, they work their volume and tone knobs. I always watch the guy that plays lead with us most of the time, Jeff West.
Yeah. What does he play?
He plays a Strat primarily. With us, he almost always plays a Strat, but he also has an Epiphone hollow body, like the Dot Studio.
What do you call him, Jeff West?
Jeff West.
The what? The Bishop?
The Reverend Jeffrey West.
Yes. I like it.
But, you know, Jeff just, he sits there on the Strat and just is always rolling knobs, depending on, you know, and changes his tone every song. You know, he's switching to a different pickup to get a little different sound.
Another thing I found myself doing, and I don't know why, but I've been just loving it, man, it's kind of holding the pick in the palm of my hand and just playing with my thumb, playing with fingers, mm-hmm. playing without a pick on some slower stuff, you know, yeah. like, man, it's a different world, man, when you kind of put that pick down.
There's a lot more possibilities that way.
Man, it is. You can just do little trills and bends and real subtle things. And, of course, those guys like Knopfler, Jeff Beck, and Jimmy Vaughn, none of those guys play with picks ever. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's something to that, man. I've just kind of enjoyed – because when I'm playing around the house, I pick up a guitar and I'm strolling down the hall, I never have a pick. I just sit there and just kind of and I like some of the stuff I'm doing. Just walk around the house. I'm kind of like, man, that's cool. And I get on stage and I'm just banging with the pick the whole time. I'm kind of like, man, why how come I'm using a pick on stage? And I've been, quote, unquote, practicing at home, just messing around in front of the TV, you know, with the kids running around with no pick. Mm-hmm. But I've kind of developed some things I do. I don't know, man. I guess it's healthy. You're always just growing and changing the things you do.
Why don't you just keep two guitars on stage and switch them in between songs? Does that beat you down?
I don't know. Yeah, kind of. It's sort of. I'm known to just put on a guitar unless it just quits functioning. That's just what I finish the show with.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's not healthy, but fun stuff, man. Guitar. So you meet. Hold on. I want to back up here. You call me there. Calls me the other day, Kurt South. He says, guess who's up here at Fred's? This is the hipster hangover party, folks, for those of you all out there. Fred's, every Sunday for lunch, Kurt South is there at Fred's playing. Calls me on Sunday and says, man, guess who's up here? I'm like, I don't know, McGee Payne. Besides him, Billy Gibbons, ZZ Top, great, the Reverend Willie G. What was he doing? Had he played the show with Petty?
No.
I thought he played a show with Petty at the...
Well, you told me that, and I assumed that that's what he'd been doing, but he doesn't play with Petty until September.
Oh, okay. I knew he was on tour.
This all led to a controversy.
Uh-oh.
On Facebook and Twitter, I mentioned that I met Billy Gibbons at Fred's.
Uh-huh.
Well, the next day, Billy was flying to Santiago, Chile to play with ZZ Top.
Right.
So he's just going to be
some guys.
South
some guys barbecue back there, down there.
He's doing it's a bunch of earthquake relief or something. And he had played the Saturday night before. He had played at a private party on a ranch in East Texas.
Uh-huh. What?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
You know what the price was? Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, I'm dying to know.
$250,000. $250,000 for a private party. Makes
Phil Pritchard
and
the full
band,
$3,000 in your backyard. Or ZZ Top, $250,000.
Yes. So I have an old friend named Jordan, not Jordan Mikoski.
Right. Let me. How did you become aware of the presence of the Reverend?
That's what
Willie
I'm telling
G?
You with Jordan.
Yeah. So you're playing your gig.
I finished the gig. Somebody comes up to me and says, "Hey, did you see Billy Gibbons?" No, I haven't. Well, a friend of mine, he's a local businessman, Jordan. Turns out he does all of Billy Gibbons' marketing for
him. Yeah, it works with him.
For his picks. He has his own line of picks, guitar slides, all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Does stuff on his website. Does a lot of merchandising for him. And I haven't seen Jordan in a while. I didn't know that he had this new business venture. Well, he's the reason Billy Gibbons was there. He told Billy, hey, since you're going to be in East Texas, drop by Fort Worth. We can talk business. Got to take you to Fred's. You'd love it. I hang out there a lot.
Yeah.
That's why Billy was there.
Yeah.
I walked in.
What was he wearing?
What he always wears.
Always dressed like you're going to play a show, Pete Cotney would say.
Which that whole theory drives me nuts, mm-hmm. but Billy was living it.
Yeah, he wasn't there in his shorts and tees.
Just long jacket, this little knit cap on.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was hotter than hell out there, but he was just sitting
jacket.
Inside.
Yeah.
Jacket, boots, beard just laying lovingly on the table.
Yeah.
But I walked into Fred's and I look in the corner booth and sure enough there's Billy Gibbons and I'm like, dude, he's sitting with I used to give that guy rides home when he couldn't drive.
Yeah.
And Jordan sees me and says, hey, he waves me over and he goes, hey, it's Billy Gibbons, it's my friend Kurt. And you know, that mm-hmm. I was just like, God, this is weird. I had no idea you knew Billy Gibbons or worked with him in any capacity.
Of course, Kurt calls me to tell me this. I'm like, get him on the podcast.
Get him on the podcast.
Get him on the podcast.
He had business to attend to. But that was super cool. He was really nice, really cool. Hung out there all afternoon for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Talked to everybody, took pictures, did what anyone asked him. He was a very cool old guy. He's tiny, small dude. I mean, couldn't weigh more than 120 pounds.
Was it true a few years ago he was really sick? That's what I had heard.
But he's got, I believe,
hepatitis maybe or something.
Well, I've heard him say before in interviews that the only times that his hands don't shake is when he plays guitar.
Is that right?
I mean, he's real. I mean, yeah. Looks older than the hills, man.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Just looks rough. But yeah. He was really cool, just all smiles, kind of happy.
Oh, yeah,
there.
Yeah.
He seemed really in his element there, you know. He kind of dug what was going on, I think.
Sure.
So, but, yeah, it was awesome, man. It's just rock and roll royalty.
You just kind of said hi to him, or did you sit down?
Yeah, just
or
a little bit of conversation, uh-huh. And just the owner of Fred's was sitting there, and he was telling Billy, he's like, yeah, it's the guy that was just playing outside, and Billy's like, oh, it was incredible, man. It was beautiful,
beautiful, man. Oh, I loved it.
I'm sure it was.
Like nothing I've ever heard in my life, man. Boy, ZZ Top, man, a lot of great ZZ Top stories and folklore around Texas. I mean, just, and I think a lot of people don't realize, who don't play a lot of guitar, how everybody knows Clapton and Jimmy Page and Hendrix. But, man, in most circles, Gibbons is way up there. Now, a lot of people learned of ZZ Top, especially maybe younger guys, kind of with the 80s and all. They did all that, you know, Legs and Eliminator record.
Hey, Eliminator was great.
It was. Oh, it was great. It was just full of hits.
It was dated. It was. You can tell it was made in the 80s, no doubt.
Yeah, and that whole sound. You know, it is amazing how well ZZ Top did in the 80s. I mean,
you know, that was all programmed drum machine stuff.
Well, but just they were old blues guys in the era of Michael Jackson, but they're still selling millions. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really was.
Their management and everybody, to the beards and the whole spinning the fuzzy guitars and. You know, it kind of seems funny and it's a gimmick, but I go, but man, it's sold. I mean, it people knew who those guys were.
Well, their longtime manager was Bill Hamm, Fort Worth native.
Yeah.
So they still live in Texas. They very much have their roots here and they're a Texas thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was pretty cool. You know, he's one of those guys that. You know, he's not the biggest star in the world now, but dude, when I was growing up in the 80s, I mean, God, ZZ Top was so huge. And just to think, man, I'm just going to run into that guy after one of my gigs somewhere.
Yeah.
I think it's possible.
Dude. I went to, when I was living in Austin, I went to the mail place, you know, the little mailboxes, et cetera, or something. I had a box there, and I went there, and on the counter was three or four. Shrunken heads, human heads. Have you seen these things, like these voodoo things?
I keep mine in the fridge.
Yeah. It's a like the size of a tennis ball, but it's a human head.
Yeah.
It's got hair and.
You don't have any?
It's a mummified, weird voodoo kind of deal.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of them just rolling around on the counter, and I said, "What is this?" They're like, "Well, this is all being shipped from here." By Billy Gibbons. Does he like collect this kind of stuff? Or it wouldn't surprise me.
I don't know. You know, that hat that he wears.
Yeah,
it's just like a. It's kind of a like a stocking cap, but bigger.
Yeah, it's kind of got little beady things on
it.
Yeah, yeah.
My brother told me this. I called my brother. He's a huge ZZ Top Billy Gibbons fan.
Sure.
I thought he would enjoy hearing this, and he said, "Did he have that hat on?" I was like, "Yeah." What's the deal with that hat? And he goes, "Man, like 10 years ago." Because Billy Gibbons always wore like a big sombrero kind of hat for years and years.
Yeah.
And it's a recent development with this knit cap he wears.
Right.
So, man, they were over in Africa like 8 or 10 years ago. And some leader of a
Some
of a
shaman
tribe,
or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Told Billy that he loved his cowboy hat. And Billy said, well, I like your hat. And he was wearing this little beaded knit cap. And they traded hats.
Hmm.
And the reason they did that because in that culture, in whatever tribe it was in Africa, if you compliment somebody on something, they're honor bound to give you the item.
Huh.
So that's why. My brother says apparently Billy never takes it off.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Never ever. And he had it on. He was wearing it.
Wow. The great Billy Gibbons. Well, man, let's just segue that right into the vault. We're going to look at some ZZ Top in the vault next.
Been waiting for the bus.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, imploring you to call me. Here's my number. You ready? The actual cell phone number in my pocket, 817-733-5256. Should you feel the need that the full band needs to come play for you and your friends, for your event, in your club, whatever, call me. 817-733-5256. Or to book a little time at the studio, or at least come tour the studio, let me buy you a free chicken fried steak, talk about your record, etc.
Doesn't it freak you out to give your phone number out?
Well, it's just that, my business line, my personal line, it's all one and the same these days. I don't know. When did that start?
I'm always afraid people will actually call me.
Yeah? You don't want that to happen. That's the last thing.
My phone rings too much as it
is. Don't try to call Kurt South. Don't try to call just Kurt South.
Shoot me an email.
Yeah.
Tweet me.
What are your tweets? What are your email? Kurt?
KurtSouth@att.net.
Nice. Email Kurt South. You can email me as well. Phil@PhilPritchett.com. Come record at the studio or book the full band. We were talking about Kurt's encounter with the great Billy Gibbons. And he's bound for New Orleans, man. That's the lyric. So Billy Gibbons at Fred's, man, hanging out wearing his tribal cap that he got in Africa. I kind of got nervous when you said he was there.
Yeah.
I said, man, give him the podcast. Said he couldn't quite make it. But what if he just said, like, okay, he just shows up, and I got 1 hour of Billy Gibbons. Oh, man.
Unreal.
Oh, man.
Unreal.
Well, I guess I'd get him doing like a kind of like Gary Peanut or somebody. Kind of, hey, how'd you get into music? You do that the first segment. He'd kind of talk about, well, my daddy had a guitar. He'd tell his story.
Yeah.
But quickly, you'd get into some other stuff I'd want to know. But what I would ask him about is his tone and what he does. But what do you know about what he played? Do you know much about it? I don't know if I've seen ZZ. He always plays those goofy-looking guitars. But back in the old days, man, back around, we're looking at their 1973 record here in the vault. Tres Hombres, man. Three men. Tres Hombres. Which ones are on here, South? Jesus just left Chicago
and LaGrange.
LaGrange, people would know that.
The two big ones. Indeed. Beer Drinkers and Hellraisers.
Hell yeah, man.
Waiting for the bus. Hot Blue and Righteous. I love it.
Dude, but the big thing with Gibbons was his guitar playing.
What?
False notes. Did he play a Les Paul? Did he play a Strat? What did he play?
He's been playing a Gretsch for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, now there's a signature Gretsch.
He has those custom-made weird things. Every time I see him playing, I never know what he's playing.
No,
like,
you know what? Amps, he, at least as recently as like last year, he's playing through Crate amps. They're B-series tube amps. Yeah, a lot of guys have used them. Yeah.
Really?
I mean, I'm sure they mod his out for
right,
him. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. He plays the Gretsch guitars through those big Crate amps.
What did he use, though, back in the day, man? He had to just use a little Fender 112. Just some old, like a Champ or something. It's just got that honky kind of... Did he use some of that old stuff?
I don't know.
He did. I've never seen a whole lot of footage of them playing, Like, there's...
Old footage of them is rare.
It's
just
scarce.
Like in the 80s, they popped up.
Yeah, man, but these records were all made in the early 70s. I'm always looking for, like, live stuff or clubs or documentaries on ZZ Top, and there's not a whole bunch out there. If you know something, email me, Phil@PhilPritchett.com, if you know a definitive ZZ Top DVD or documentary or something like that.
You can find something. There's got to be something that shows them playing. I bet
the last 20, 30 years, though, man, it's always just they're playing the Super Bowl or they're playing on top of an airplane or something weird. They're always just doing something crazy.
Yeah, I mean, like, he has all those false harmonics and stuff. It's just...
Yeah, just those side pick, just kind of... Just
awesome.
God, just great tone. I've seen him twice. You ever seen him live? ZZ, ever been to a show?
No. Mm.
Man, they had I saw him at the Cotton Bowl. Oh, jeez. What was the one after, like, Eliminator with Sleeping Bag?
Recycler?
Yeah, maybe it was that era, I'm slipping inside my sleeping bag. And, sold out Cotton Bowl, Steve Miller, and a couple other guys. Santana, maybe. One of those.
Just powered down.
Yeah. But,
Ask Santana how he gets his tone.
Yeah.
Just a Paul Reed
Smith. Yeah, right. I've never been a big fan of Santana.
When I hear that guitar tone, I just punch myself in the face.
Well, but you know it's him. You got to give him the credit for that.
I know. I don't know why I don't like it, because he's good at it, and it I don't know why it beats me.
God, me too. For some reason, I've just never been into him.
And see, you're really into Latin-infused kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I would think you'd kind of like him a little bit. But I just...
Man, if he was playing like a gut string acoustic, I would be. But just that... Yeah. What is it about that Paul Reed Smith? I don't like the way they look. I don't like the way they sound. Why is that? All the guys play him. All the everybody plays him.
I get people just calling me all sorts of names. And I go, oh, Paul Reed Smith, spare me.
But yeah, I don't know. I just associate him with Creed or something.
Yeah.
I just don't associate him with the great players.
I don't know.
Is that not fair?
Is that not fair? No, it's fair because I hate them too. But.
They have like the tiger... cut finishes and just
bird's eye maple.
Bird's eye maple, like purple, painted purple and stuff. I'm just like, dude, I'm just more into the classic stuff, I guess.
Yeah,
the boring old Fenders and SGs and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just something about them that drips cheese, and I can't.
You got to give them credit. They're one of the only brands that's come along after Gibson and Fender that has really
taken over market share.
Well, took it over market share. You go, man. People play them. You know, they are out there and they're their own unique deal. And I had one that said Budweiser on it.
I remember that.
We had our Budweiser thing, and they said, man, you got to play one song a night with this guitar. And, man, I was just always just cringing. And half the time I wouldn't do it, and my road manager would get all mad. You got to play it, man. I was like, I can't. I can't even look at it. I can't pick it up.
That thing was a piece. Yeah. What'd you do with it?
I sold it on eBay for like $600.
Thing was
it wasn't a real Paul Reed Smith. It was kind of like the Santana,
it was
like
the
lesser. Yeah. It was kind of lousy. I don't know, it was all right. It worked. But
it was Velveeta.
Yeah, man. I remember hearing great stories about. I saw that ZZ Top show at the Cotton Bowl. God, it was just so huge, so far from the stage. It was hard to really get into it. And then I went. My friend had a free ticket in Austin at the Frank Irwin Center. A little bit smaller than a stadium. And I was like, well, okay. And I went, and man, I really enjoyed it. We had good seats, and they were in top four, and it sounded really good.
Did they have the chick come out and introduce him with the bullwhip? That's like a bit.
Yeah, thing. No, I don't think so. They had the, in the middle of the show, Dusty Hill, bass player, and Gibbons just get side by side, and they just start walking, and they're both on a treadmill. It's just a treadmill built into the stage, and they're just kind of walking in place, just down. They had all these little, they had all the little dance moves and all that stuff, and
that's awesome.
It was cool. It's campy and fun, and
you can tell that they do not take themselves that seriously at all.
Very very silly. Very.
I
fun.
Mean, they do have a song called Pearl Necklace.
That's right.
I mean,
yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah. That's right.
my uncle JD, who's just a huge rock and roll buff,
packing heat down there.
He talks about two bands, AC/DC and ZZ Top. And he goes, if it wasn't for Sexon, they would have nothing to sing about.
That's right.
And he's right.
That's right, man.
And they are unapologetic about it.
That's right, ZZ Top, man. Very mysterious origins. Were they from Houston?
Mm-hmm.
Played down there at. God, all those clubs. It's funny, you see those old pictures of them. No beards, just short hair. Yes, Gibbons.
These pictures here.
He's just wearing jeans.
He's just wearing like Wranglers and a brush popper and a cowboy hat. They look like a modern day country band.
Yeah.
That guy looks like Ryan Bingham right there.
they had a, Top had a, I ran into a guy that did some road work. He's one of those sound guys that just old and has been on every tour since like 68.
Oh, yeah.
Real nice guy. And he was talking about, he goes, well, man, my first gig was when ZZ Top did the whatever, one of those tours where they played, Memorial Stadium at the University of Texas, like in Austin, like, back when they were just, but that was like the Tejas tour or something where they had like buzzards and coyotes on
and
the
they
stage.
They had live rattlesnakes.
Rattlesnakes and, yeah, and they had. He said, and one of his jobs is to go find animals. Like he said, man, we were short two rattlesnakes and three coyotes. So I drove all over town, just drinking and whatever. You're just trying to locate wild animals in captivity. We had cages in the truck, man, driving under the stadium, trying to get them on stage in time for the show, and just all this wild, great stuff. There's like, oh man, that was just. It was probably like late '70s. But yeah, man, they really came to prominence in the 80s with MTV. God, they'd have just been extinct if they'd have never made that jump.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were just gone the way of so many 70s bands that
Steve Miller, you know.
Yeah.
Well, Steve Miller was all right in the 80s, but yeah.
He didn't make great videos and all that. But Top, man, made you mentioned their longtime manager, Bill Ham. Is he still their manager?
No, they parted ways in the late 90s, I think.
But man, he was there the whole time, man. Lone Wolf Management. They had offices down there.
He produced this album, too.
Yeah.
He produced a lot of their stuff.
They had a Lone Wolf Management down there in Austin, and Ham was real instrumental, man, in marketing the band. I mean, three guys standing on stage playing blues stuff. Great stuff, talent, mm-hmm. But good Lord, how many people were like that? He just said, look, man, if we do the beards, the synchronized little moves, the funny stuff.
Fuzzy guitar.
It'll get us on TV. It'll get us on Leno. It'll get us on, or Carson back then, you know, Letterman. They became a marketable, they had some shtick. They had some shtick.
Well, because how many bands in Texas and in Austin particularly?
Yeah.
Three pieces, played kind of blues.
Yeah, right. Just some dude soloing.
You know, what's the difference between Chris Duarte and ZZ Top?
Yeah,
you know, there's so many blues guys in Austin who all play good stuff, can all play guitar. I mean, not that Billy Gibbons isn't
a great,
incredible.
Sure.
He is,
that's right.
But you know, they had to do something to make him stand out. You know?
That's right, man. There's no question.
And obviously it worked because you know even my dad, who does not care for rock and roll at all, he can tell you their names.
Mm-hmm.
He knows. Oh yeah, those are the guys with the car. You know,
with the beards and the car and the fuzzy guitar, all that image, man. It played. It was as recognizable as maybe any band of their era. You know,
absolutely. They've become ubiquitous with the beards.
Ubiquitous with the
beards.
If
you see some guy with a long beard, you almost always go, hey, look at the dude with the ZZ Top beard.
Yeah,
my whole life, the ZZ Top beard has been for any old man who's got a beard that goes
squared off at the bottom.
Passes his Adam apple.
That's right.
You know?
It's the ZZ Top beard.
It used to be the Santa Claus beard. No.
No.
As of the 80s, it was the ZZ Top beard.
Man, I wonder when they started growing the beards.
I don't know.
They didn't have them in the 70s.
No, they don't have them in here.
Yeah, no. I think that was by MTV, man, by Eliminator, they had that stuff going on. Maybe a little before then.
Yeah.
But, I remember Jens Pinkernail, the guitar player for Jack Ingram, had for a long time, and we were doing a lot of shows with Jack. Jens, big German guy, played a Strat and had a twin, ran a twin and a super reverb at the same time behind him. Which was my rig too. But in those days, I kind of learned from him. Yeah, he was from Germany, and had obviously grown up in Germany. And he said, I moved to Texas to learn to play the guitar, to learn the blues, you know. And I asked him who his big guy was and why he was even over here playing the guitar. And his guy was Gibbons. He's good old Billy.
Really?
Billy Gibbons. Yeah, or one of them for sure.
Yeah.
Talking about tone, talking about all that stuff, man. Even when I was starting out, I knew something about it, but I didn't. Not to the extent these guys talked about it. Very mysterious, man. Tone. That's what I want to know about Billy Gibbons.
Pinkernail, the Dirk Nowitzki of Texas music.
Yes, indeed. Tall German.
I'm very tall for my age.
Never won a ring. That's his claim to fame. Oh, we love you, Dirk. We love
low
you.
Low blow.
Oh,
Nowitzki's a listener, man.
Yeah, I know he's a listener.
God.
But remember that time Nowitzki and Nash were over at Woody's? Just drinking
there.
And partying.
Were you there?
I wasn't there.
We
played the next night, and they'd been there the night before.
I will never
forget. What year was that?
This is
a Woody's Tavern. Woody's Tavern, folks.
Made ESPN.
Here in Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Django
Walker
and Dirk.
One Light Town opened up for him. Greg Schrader. This is how I met Greg Schrader.
Yeah.
He was in One Light Town.
This is when Woody's was really happening at the Texas music deal.
And Dirk went up on stage.
Dirk Nowitzki and Steve Nash,
Smith.
Both Mavericks. Yeah. Wandering in.
It was unbelievable. They got there at 2 that afternoon.
Uh-huh. And he and Nash?
Yeah. The whole reason they're there is a regular Woody's coach. Call me coach. Hadn't seen you in a while.
Who's coach?
He's a guy he's at the corner of the bar every day at Woody's at happy hour.
Yeah.
And he went to college at UC Santa Barbara or wherever with Steve Nash.
Yeah.
And the guys, they had just lost to San Antonio in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And they were flying back into DFW. And the drummer for Coldplay
was
also
with
him. He's a good friend of Steve's.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, I'll come pick you guys up at the airport. You can come party with me tonight at Woody's. So at 2 in the afternoon, Coach walks through the door with Steve and Dirk, the drummer from Coldplay.
Yeah.
And like four other NBA players who are all just some like rookies and stuff. And the first thing they do is they go around the corner to Joe's and order, have pizzas delivered.
Yeah.
And they buy pizza for all of us. I'm in there hanging out with this girl that I dated at the time.
Right.
And we're all just in there eating pizza, playing shuffleboard with them and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I have a show that night. The reason I remember this night, for it's one of the many reasons, is that was the night of my CD release party, my first album.
Right.
Which was at the beer garden at the White Elephant.
Mm-hmm.
Went, played my show, and came back, and Woody's has just got 500 people in
yeah.
it, and just Dirk and Steve are leading the charge.
Yeah.
And I mean, these guys are partying on a level.
Of course,
level.
They were probably 23, 4. They were young. Weren't they them? This is probably 10 years ago. Maybe not that long ago.
This is like 7, 8 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, yeah they're like mid, late 20s.
Yeah.
And just partying like crazy, and they were there till almost 4 in the morning, and I stayed there the whole time.
Yeah.
And they finally left. They came in a little wagon train of white Cadillac Escalades.
Yeah, right.
Was they're leaving, I'll never forget.
And Dirk got on stage and played guitar.
Yeah, he played Django's Paul Reed Smith. Sorry, Django.
Django.
But finally, they finally get him out to leave. They can't get Dirk to leave the bar. He's behind the bar with like a jar of pretzels, just pouring
some
it on
shots.
His
this is how
just
we do it.
Give me some more. Well, as they're leaving, this one other no-name NBA player who's a rookie is there, and Dirk just goes, "Rookie, pick up the tab." And they all just leave. And this one is like, "Whoa, hold on, what are you talking about?" It was like $4,500 or something. So this poor kid, he's like 22, is just fishing for his credit cards. Like, man, I don't have any money, man. He just lays it down, tries to
just
cover the
runs
tab.
It, covers the $4,500 tab as Steve Nash.
Yeah, and the cool thing is they left, they were blasting my new CD in the Escalade.
Oh,
because
is that
I'd
right?
just given them copies, and they were like, "I just good country music." Just
country music, man.
Drunk, having
yes,
a good time.
Yes, indeed. Novitski, guitar player, aficionado of tone, blues, and booze.
Probably a ZZ Top fan. We
probably
don't know
ZZ
for sure.
Top. I'm sure he
but
is.
But I'm sure he is.
Well, folks, that is ZZ Top. Billy Gibbons talk, Trace Hombres. Oh, man, all those top records are good in the 70s. Pick up, man, Rio Grande Mud's another really good one. Love that one, too.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Billy Gibbons, great guitar, man. Just real simple. Simple guitar and funny songs, but man, great guitar playing, solos, great tone. Just a badass guy, man. Billy Gibbons, man. We'll get him on the podcast one of these days, Sal.
We'll get him.
We're going to get him in here.
We can get him.
He's going to want to be on.
He can be had.
Well, that is all the time we have for this week, folks, on the P2 Podcast. We hope you feel a little smarter, a little more enlightened, having listened to us talk here to you and with you for the last hour. Email us, as always, phil@philpritchard.com with any of your questions about the podcast, ideas. I read them all. Steve and all you guys who email me all the time after every podcast and comment on what we're doing. I really appreciate it. Always read it. Thank you very much. Book the band or come record in the studio, 817-733-5256. Also, man, download the new Kurt South stuff, man, and the old Kurt South stuff. KurtSouth.net. Kurt South.
KurtSouthMusic.com.
KurtSouthMusic.com. Or just go to iTunes, man. Check
just
out the new.
Forgo my site. Go to iTunes.
Go
and
to
get
iTunes.
It. Though you can get it cheaper on my site.
There you go. Get it there. And the new video, man, is it up yet?
Yeah, it went live this morning.
Oh,
7
good deal.
O'clock.
On your website?
My website.
Facebook.
Can you see
it? Yeah, okay.
You can just, yeah,
Kurt South.
It's just out there.
New video. Check it out. It's got some violence in it, some sex.
Some nudity.
Everything you'd want to expect from it. Check it out. The great John Reynolds, our friend here at Trinidad, directed, shot that video. Good stuff.
John's laying down on the floor next to us as we speak.
That's right.
Wake up, John.
Wake up, John. Just meditating. Well, that's all the time we have, folks. Be good to each other out there, the didactic duo. This is Phil Pritchett and Kurt South signing off on this week's edition of the podcast. Next week, we will see you soon. Take care. I got a lot of nice girls.